Welcome, everyone. It is the Fly Guys podcast, Justin Goodhart. And finally, back in the saddle again, about 110 miles away from me, is the one, the only. He's repping Shippensburg University today, the newly married Cameron Klein. Cameron, how are you doing today?
I'm good, dude. I'm good. I'm getting really frustrated with Discord. I'm trying to put the goddamn window just a little bit lower so I can see my audio to make sure that it's all recording.
Oh, dude, I literally just did the same thing.
So I popped it down on the side and it says hide members, which is myself, because I didn't even can't even see myself because the hide member symbol is over top of myself, so it's all distracting me. So I hit hide members. It puts me up in the corner. But instead of just putting up in the corner, it's like flickering off and on, and it's just like, dude, can I just
dude, when are you gonna
see
finally
who
just
I'm
get
talking
Mac?
To? Like, oh my god.
Dude, you need to get a Mac. It's time to get a Mac. They're so much better.
Yeah, but they're $3,000 more expensive.
I paid $1,100 for mine. It's fine.
Yeah, well, my brother doesn't have an old one that he's trying to sell to me.
No, I don't use Alex's anymore, dude.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, I bought my own because I had to give Alex his laptop back. But while Cameron figures that out, firstly, there's so much. We have not been together on a show in over a month. It's crazy to think it's been over a month since we last did one together. I did a solo one last week. Cameron, let's just recap everything that's happened in the last month. I went to two weddings,
yeah.
One in Chicago, and then I went to yours. The Miami Dolphins are 3-1. The Philadelphia Eagles are 4-0. The Flyers still stink. The Phillies have made the playoffs for the first time since we were in high school.
Yeah, I mean, dude.
There's so much to start with, but I really want to start. I want to start this off the right way for everyone listening. Cameron, congratulations on marrying Olivia. I do want to ask about the honeymoon, but I would be remiss if we didn't at least talk a little bit about the wedding day, because there was the day that the Eagles playing the Commanders while the Miami Dolphins were in a fierce battle with the Buffalo Bills. And as I said on last week, if you needed any more proof that Cameron and Olivia are going to spend a long, happy life together, the Miami Dolphins beat the Buffalo Bills with a half-alive Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, so, it was nuts, dude. At one point, I'm as those who have gotten married and have been in wedding parties and stuff, it's just nothing but constantly being pulled in 18 different directions. And so before the ceremony even started, we were doing our photos, so we didn't have to do them later. And I look at my phone and I'm like, why the fuck is Teddy Bridgewater throwing the ball right now? Why is that happening? And so then I found out obviously all this stuff and that Tua came back, and I even at the moment at that day I was like, that's weird. That he went back for a concussion and came back into the game. Like,
we'll
talk about
the Dolphins. We'll talk about
And I figured we would. We failed.
We kind of had to.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, no, it's the wedding was great. It
rained.
Not as a joke. It was. I would say the best day of my life so far. Yeah, it did rain during the ceremony, but that was to me worked out fine because then it took a lot of the pressure off.
So
of things.
I wanted to say this to you. When I turned around as the ceremony started, I turned around, I see the big gray cloud. At that point I started praying. I was like, God, not today. Like, just have it be a nice little scare. And then obviously the rain comes. Now, meanwhile, I had the Eagles game underneath my suit jacket. As you know, you're saying your thing. I'm just kind of looking down at the game and everything. Here's what annoyed me. And I'm sure you didn't care in the moment. I don't know if you care now. Why on earth were you two the last people that were inside the venue when you're the groom and the bride should have been first in line? Everyone should have just waited for you guys to pass them so you guys could get inside first so you're not the ones as wet. Everyone else just gets up and rushes in. I'm like, guys, how about the bride and the groom for a change? How about they go first?
Yeah, no, it's, yeah.
I didn't think
I wasn't
care.
Surprised.
I found it. I told that to my mom, and she was like, oh my God, yeah. Why? They should have let those two go first. But, it was a beautiful ceremony.
Well, shout out to my cousin Brandon, because he was the only person from my side of the family that like ran over to us first. Like, he went over to us and he was like, do you guys need my jacket to cover you? So on and so. He was like the only socially apt person there who just popped up, knew what to do, and everyone else just like went inside.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fine. It was whatever. We didn't get that wet. It, you know, everything worked out.
For those who wanted to know or would be curious to know, there was one moment right before the ceremony started. I sat in like the back corner of the seating. Cameron and I made eye contact for a minute, and Cameron just smiled at me and like kind of nodded his head. I'm like, "Yeah, man, Not a chance.
Yeah.
I was, it was really a beautiful ceremony. The venue itself was awesome for the balcony that it had that allowed you to really stand above everyone as you would want to see happen for a wedding. But easily the best part, though, for at least in my opinion, was listening to your brother give his best man speech about you and Olivia. You could tell that that was from the heart. That was he might have had something written down, but that was from your brother's heart, where you could feel that was coming from.
I didn't know what to expect from my brother. He's just very unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
Like you never know what Nate's gonna do with any given situation, and I knew the speech was going to be good because I knew he cares. So I knew he was going to care to do a good enough speech. I didn't think it was going to be as good as it was. I didn't think it was going to be go in the direction that he did. That to me was the highlight of the wedding. That was my favorite part was him saying, and it's interesting because I wrote a letter to him and all my groomsmen, each their own individual ones. And a lot of what he said in the speech was in my letter.
Oh, really?
We did not talk, I didn't know what he was doing with my speech, and he didn't know I was writing a letter. So it was cool hearing what he was saying, and I was just thinking, it's one of those weird things where you have this person who's extremely important to your entire life, and you feel a certain way about a person, but you don't say anything because it's just that awkward conversation. You know, he doesn't come up in conversation, especially in between talks about Dragon Ball Z and who's starting for Miami and so on and so forth. So, for to go this long and to hear him say how he feels exactly how I feel was very, very cool.
I mean, it just shows that, you two were obviously really close. And I have to give Olivia's maid of honor a lot of credit because she didn't have anything written down. What she said was really off the cuff. And she sounded really well. I mean, again, there really wasn't – I wouldn't even I don't think there's a single thing you guys would have changed. The other funny part was when they were trying to get the audio set up inside the venue and Cameron calls down and goes, "Hey, what's the score of the Dolphins game?" And then at some point, I just yelled up, "Oh, by the way, the Eagles are winning."
Dude, yeah, because, we're just standing there. We were just standing there. And, it was just
I didn't know. At first, I didn't know
what
we were waiting
for. Nobody
was
talking.
I didn't realize that there was the capability to get the audio inside. And I just thought you guys were going to have to just shout your vows at one another so that way everyone could hear.
Right.
So I was confused at first. But, everything after the rain, everything goes off without a hitch. The food was great, by the way. They did a very good job. The people at the Penryn Mansion, they did a really nice job. And now that you're a married man, I want to know, how was the honeymoon?
The honeymoon was amazing. I'm going to say something, probably a lot of things are going to upset some people right now. So we went to Boston.
Yeah.
So we left, wedding was Sunday. We left Monday. We got down to We're staying in a place called Revere Beach. It's 20 minutes outside of Boston and Salem going both directions. Took about 5.5 hours to get down there. We got down there probably around 7, 8 o'clock. Right on the beach, you could hear the waves crashing as you started to fall asleep. It is awesome.
That's so awesome.
What isn't awesome is there is one bad review for this Airbnb. Something about airplane noise. Of the 300 other reviews, there was nothing mentioned about airplane noise. Evidently, Logan Airport is right next to Boston, which is their airport, their international airport.
Okay.
It's like a 6-minute drive from our Airbnb. They changed the trajectory of how the flights come in given the seasons. We learned this from somebody in Revere because they lived there and they told us about it. So in the summer, they don't come in to where you can hear it over the beach. Because I don't know if they do this on purpose, if it's because of jet speed or wind speed. I have no idea. Point is that I guess the only other person who stayed there the time that we stayed there was that other person writing that bad review.
Oh, my God.
Every 20 minutes up until about 11 o'clock at night was just the roar of a jet engine. Every 20 minutes, and I'm not exaggerating. It was just Luckily, we weren't there that much. Anyway, moving on. So, we spent Tuesday in Boston, Wednesday in Salem, and then we drove up and finished our honeymoon in New Hampshire, left on Saturday. Boston reminds me a lot of Philadelphia.
Well,
it is a lot smaller.
The cities have been compared quite a bit. The two cities have been compared a lot.
Which I think isn't entirely fair, because they are a lot, Boston's a lot smaller than Philadelphia. I think it's in the top 25 of the largest cities, where Philadelphia is 6. It's a lot bigger. It has almost double the amount of people as Boston. But Boston reminded me a lot of Philadelphia except that everything was cleaner. Everything was nicer.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
everything was far more taken care of. Everything you like about Philadelphia. Boston has it and better.
I'm just ending the show right now. I'm just ending.
We can
stop recording now.
I have this feeling like people from Philadelphia, including myself, talk about how great it is. And I love Philadelphia. I love the city that I live in. But they talk about it and how this is Philly pride, and they kind of take pride in being hard and tough and all this shit.
And dirty.
And it's like, yeah, spend a week outside of Philadelphia. That's what I challenge to you. If you truly think Philadelphia is the greatest city in the world, spend a week in another major city just outside of Philadelphia. And then I guarantee about 60% of the people that do that are going to find that they don't really find that much pride in those characteristics from Philadelphia. It's just that they were born there and weren't given a choice.
Ironically enough, though, Cameron, I can actually I can at least speak, because I stayed in Chicago, you know, during the wedding that I went to. You'd be surprised. Like, first of all, that wedding went very well for me.
Right.
Very, very well for me. And it was an awesome, awesome freaking venue. You know, the way that my cousin Shayna and her husband had it all set up was incredible. But just going out after, you know, I went out two nights in a row, Friday night and Saturday night in Chicago, which a lot of people would tell you you're insane for doing, but I've done it enough in Philadelphia. I'm not really that concerned about anything happening to me in Chicago, especially when you're in like a huge bar district with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people.
Yeah, it's all about where you're at. If you know where you're at and if you're aware of your surroundings, you'll be fine.
I was in downtown Chicago. I wasn't really that worried.
Right.
But what I will say is, here was the really interesting thing. All the bars that I tried to go to, every single one except for one Irish bar, because of course it was an Irish bar, every single one of them closed at 11. Every single one. 11 o'clock. Cameron, that is early. That is early. To not even
make it to midnight. No, that's very early. That's very early, especially for a city. Yeah, that's
very
early.
But what I will say is Chicago is a beautiful city. I mean, I think I sent you some photos. Like, it was a really, really pretty city, and I enjoyed it a lot. Now, I think that at the end of the day, people love Philadelphia because they're from there. That's what they're familiar with, and they've come to love, you know, the little things that about each city. But like you said, in Boston, it is a beautiful city. It is one of the oldest cities in America, and it truly maintains that old feeling to it, the old cobblestone road. The oldest bars that you'll ever find in America. Fenway Park, which is like, you know, though it's been renovated, it's one of the oldest stadiums. And God bless you for going to Fenway Park during your honeymoon.
Yeah,
so,
it's another thing I want to talk to you about.
Oh, yeah. So, now that you're returning home, you come home to good old Newtown, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And the NFL hates your team now. And the fans of every team hate your team. Here's what I want to ask you. From when I assume you saw, like, you know, it happened to Tua, or at least, you know, I've seen enough highlights about
it. Yeah, that was why I watched the game. Yep.
What has been your take on the whole Tua situation?
Okay. Here's my thing. The whole, like, the people that are blaming Miami, saying that it was Miami's fault that this shit happened, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but it's absolutely ridiculous. And especially what's more, the most ridiculous thing about it is people blaming Mike McDaniel, the head coach. The head coach is going off of what his doctors are telling him.
Uh-huh.
His doctors are telling him his player's fine, he's good to go. His player's telling him he's fine, he's good to go. What are you supposed to do? Tell him, I don't know. I think you might have a concussion because I have zero background in medical profession whatsoever. No, he's not going to do that. He's going to play his quarterback who says that he's good to go, and he's going to trust the medical professional who told him that he was good to go.
And his job's now, to win. He needs to win.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Now, for the whole thing of, like, Miami being this piece of shit organization for sending him out there, again, the NFL Players Association doctors cleared the guy. What else is there supposed to...
Now, what have they done since? They fired the one independent doctor for, quote-unquote, mistakes made during the process. Now, that feels a lot to me like someone had to fall on the sword.
Well, no. See, I don't know where you read that, but that's also incorrect. So it wasn't because of mistakes made. They fired him because he was hostile during the interview.
Hostile?
He apparently would not answer their questions and, like, did not like that they were questioning his professionalism. And so they were like, okay, if we're not going to be able to...
So that is definitely not what I read. Okay, all right. All right, that's very...
And that was...
But even then...
I'm reading something that came directly from the NFL.
Okay.
That was from their PR, which again,
I'm not going to question it.
The NFL is, well, the NFL also does have its own, you know, it has its own agenda, and it's trying to protect its brand, which, because a guy was put in the fencer pose for, you know, 10 minutes and structured off a field. But the other thing, for people blaming Miami and the coach and all this shit, at the end of the day, and this is the thing, too, like, people are saying, like, well, how am I supposed to trust my kid if the NFL doctors can't get it right? And I get that. I get your concern. At the end of the day, if you're concerned about your kid playing football, you can put as many fail-safes as you want. If he's running full speed at another person and they're connecting by the head at full speed with one another, they're going to have brain damage. Yeah. It's going to happen. It's part of the sport. It's a physical contact, full contact sport. People are going to get hurt. Tua's going to get hurt. People are going to get concussed. Now, my whole thing about it. Why they looked at him being hit by Buffalo and say, that's a back injury? That's gross negligence. Why you wouldn't test him for a concussion? You could test a player for a concussion on almost every single hit because most likely it caused some type of problem with their brain.
Especially like people like quarterbacks and offensive linemen that take a lot
exactly.
of hits.
So for somebody to watch that Buffalo hit, which wasn't terrible, he got shoved and he hit his head on the way down. He smacked the back of his head. Shit happens. But for you to watch that and be like, we don't need to test him for concussion. If he's a football player, you should and he's injured, you should test him for a concussion every single time. Even if he got hit in the leg, it does not matter. You should test him for a concussion. Because it's his brain. It's the whole point. You have to protect it. And this is not the first PR nightmare that the NFL has been in. Because they covered this up before.
There's a
it's
movie
ridiculous.
Made about it.
Yes. Yes. And my last bone to pick is with Amazon. And their coverage of it. And it's not because of their coverage, but it's because of this. Why do we need to see a guy in the fencer pose 6 different times in slow motion?
I everyone on Twitter said stop showing the replay.
And the thing that also pisses me off is that I'm not a doctor. I don't know shit about the brain. I know I have one. That's about all I know. But what I do know from watching sports for 25 years of my life, watching football specifically, where there's a lot of head injuries, and also watching fighting and hockey, all these things have head injuries. They all are dealing with knockouts, people being unconscious, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. The fencer pose is something that the body does when there's brain damage. It's a natural reaction.
Now,
for
I want
Al fucking Michaels, who is somebody who I deeply, deeply respect, for somebody to not know that, or at least pretend and act like he doesn't know that by saying, look at his hands as they're locking up, is just gross negligence. It's just bad broadcasting. It's terrible. Sorry, Al. You called the Miracle on Ice, which was amazing. You're the greatest commentator, in my opinion, of all time in terms of television commentating. However, that was a huge, terrible fuck-up. And for you to be pointing out somebody who has possible brain damage over and over again and not know what you're looking at, despite calling the sport for 50-plus fucking years, is absolutely ridiculous.
I have a question.
And you should be ashamed. They should be ashamed. Amazon should be ashamed. All of them should take a look in the mirror, look at what you did, look at how you screwed up, and move forward. You're all rookie commentators, half of them, because Amazon hired half of them. But you got to move forward, look at what you did wrong here, and do better next time. But you deserve the criticism for how they broadcasted that incident. It was terrible. It was terrible. Disgusting.
So when it comes to the fencer's pose, the one question I had for you, because you were the one that taught me what the fencer's pose actually is. Is there like a spectrum of how much brain damage can be sustained? You have no idea? Okay.
Yeah, I have no idea. I know that it's, again, it's something that there's possible brain damage immediately.
Yeah.
It's a bad concussion. At least, at the very least, it's a very bad concussion.
Without knowing anything more,
that's the thing. So if you have two back-to-back concussions, according to the NFL Players Association, if you have a concussion in one game and then you're cleared and then you have another one the next game, you can't play for the next week, at least for the next 2 weeks. So they weren't calling the Buffalo hit. They weren't ruling that as a concussion because he cleared protocols, even though they didn't put him through concussion protocols. So that's where it's kind of a little weird, but they're not going to make him play because of the PR thing. But because now we clearly know that he did have a concussion with the Bills. Dude, you don't take a head hit and then get up and stumble on the way back and not have something wrong with your brain. It's ridiculous. So we clearly know that he had a concussion against Buffalo. We obviously clearly know that he had a concussion against Cincinnati because he was put in the fencer pose, and that was probably because of the fact that he had a concussion the week before. If he takes another hit like that this week, I mean, you're talking about ending his career and possibly ending his life.
Mm-hmm. So he won't play this week.
He's not playing
the Jets.
This week.
He won't play this week against the Jets. No. I don't know who you guys have to after that, but I'd be surprised if you see him within the
Minnesota.
Next 2 weeks.
He might play next Sunday because that's 2 weeks from the Thursday night game.
Okay.
That kind of saves his grace a little bit. They're saying as of right now that he's passing most things, most tests, which is great.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and this is the ugly thing about football that people don't like to talk about. That type of head injury, you're not really going to know what the damage that it does until 20 years from now. He could clear all the concussion protocols, and that's fine. But in 30 years, when he forgets how to spell, when he starts having depressive episodes, when he starts going through manic periods, that's when you're going to know. Mm-hmm. And that's the sad thing about this sport that the NFL tries to cover up with guys like Junior Seau. Guys like Aaron Hernandez. These guys had brain problems because of the NFL, because of football.
I mean, I know it wasn't football, but I mean, Chris Benoit, the WWE. That was
head injuries. Yeah, it's just
the worst example I think you have out there for what
happened.
And
you can test them every week and they don't have concussion, but it's going to cause long-term problems. It is what it is. But yeah, so I mean, my whole thing is blaming Mike McDaniel and the NFL and the Miami Dolphins is dumb. Being angry at the protocols and how they weren't followed, that's what you should be angry about, absolutely. And Amazon, including Al Michaels, do better next time. But you screwed up because that was gross negligence showing a man with possible brain damage six times in slow motion over and over again.
I think this as well. I think that, you know, obviously Twitter was in an uproar. I think Twitter was in an uproar and this is my whole take on that. People tend to make their most emotional and hottest takes on Twitter. That's just...
Yeah.
So everyone was freaking out, which, you know, is... That's just what you do on Twitter. But also, I think because of what had happened over the offseason, a lot of distrust is placed right now in Stephen Ross. And I think it's possible that a lot of people thought maybe Stephen Ross pressured his coaching staff and his medical staff to get back in the game. Which, listen, I don't necessarily believe. That's kind of what I thought the perception would be because of what happened with Flores and, oh, Stephen Ross is a real piece of crap.
I could totally see somebody coming to that conclusion because again, Brian Flores' lawsuit proved that everything you said was true about Stephen Ross, about what Stephen Ross said to him.
I agree.
You know, the last part about the bribing games, that was just a joke, though. That was just a joke, so that doesn't count. But all the other shit counted. So, you know, they lose their first-round draft pick or whatever. But, yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see how people come to that conclusion. But, yeah, I just – and I get it because it was prime time. Everybody saw it. Uh-huh. That's why it was such a big deal. But it's like people were acting like, oh, Miami's – this terrible organization, Tua should never play again. It's like, dude, are you guys forgetting J.J. Watt was on a hospital bed last week getting revived by a defibrillator? And he was in the game.
He was in the game. He was playing for the Cardinals.
Like, dude, like, this is not just Miami. This is the sport. They, at the end of the day, they got to protect their brand and they got to kind of cover that shit up and, all right, man, rub some dirt on and get back out there. We need to make money.
Speaking of rubbing some dirt on it. Yes. Let's talk quickly about a team that played in some slop conditions, the Philadelphia Eagles. They moved to 4-0, defeated Doug Peterson and the Jacksonville Jaguars. They fell behind.
Who would have thought the Jacksonville Jaguars and Detroit Lions would be the toughest challenges for the Eagles coming in?
It's been
but
crazy.
But they're two teams that are playing well. Like Detroit's one of the highest scoring offenses, and the Eagles went toe-to-toe with them and beat them. Doug Peterson seems to kind of be figuring it out with that offense, which I'm not exactly surprised that he is. There's a lot of talent there. So for Philadelphia to kind of smack Jacksonville in the mouth, smack that offense in the mouth and then come back.
But, I mean, the real surprises from this Eagles season, I mean, and we'll talk about the Jacksonville game very briefly. The defense has been incredible. I don't think anyone expected Jonathan Gannon's units to figure it out the way that they have.
To me, the two big questions was Jalen and Gannon. And Jalen I wasn't too worried about. Gannon I was, but he's proven me wrong.
Hassan Reddick has turned out to be a really good signing so far. He leads the league in strips.
All the signings.
James Bradberry. Oh my goodness gracious! What a home run that hit that was.
Mm-hmm.
It's early. It's only the first quarter of the season that's completed, but they have a game against a very good team in Arizona, and it's a team that has usually bested them. The Eagles have never seemingly had solve the Arizona Cardinals. As a matter of fact, the Eagles have only beaten the Cardinals. Listen, this is one of my favorite stats out there. Going back to 2002, the Eagles have only beaten the Cardinals three times. 2002,
wow.
2008, 2013. I'm sorry, you know what? Four times. Also 2017 as well. So they have lost to the Cardinals in 2005. They lost to them in 2008 in the NFC Championship game. 2011, 2012, 2014, 2015, and 2020.
Jesus.
So the Cardinals have always been a team. And to even go even further with this, the Eagles have not won in the desert in over two decades. So this is going to be an opportunity. And Jalen Hurts, big credit to him, when he was finishing up his press conference yesterday, he even said to the media, he goes, I wasn't asked about the Cardinals. This is a good team that we're playing. And I love how he carries himself. And now that he's playing so good, it makes him even easier to be like, this guy, he's figuring it out. He knows how to be a franchise quarterback. At the very worst, he's a great leader for the team. But
yeah, no, at the very worst, he's a great leader. Absolutely.
If you had told me, Cameron, hey, the Eagles are going to be 4-0 out of the gate, I wouldn't have been shocked because I didn't think the opponents they were playing were great. I thought, wow, they beat Minnesota. That's actually really impressive. But what's really impressed me has been the way that they do it. The second quarter this season for the Eagles, they might be the best second quarter team in NFL history right now. They are just outright dominating teams on the field in the first half. Second half has been a little bit murky and it has to get better. But the Commanders game, they destroyed Carson Wentz. It didn't even look like Wentz wanted to be on the field after a while.
I wouldn't either after being sacked and hit. He got sacked six times, right?
Ten? Nine times.
He got sacked nine times?
In the entire game, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because when I heard about it, it was during my wedding. I asked Gus, my buddy Gus. I was like, you know, how's the game going? He was like, we got him six times already. And I was like, holy shit.
They had four sacks in the first quarter on Wentz.
Maybe he was six in the first half then. Yeah. Maybe he was six in the first half. That's probably what it was.
So then, and then with Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars, I mean, the Jacksonville had that game. They were going to win that game.
Yeah.
And then that 4th-and-3 happens. I'd like to take partial credit for this win, by the way, because I was wearing my Zach Ertz jersey when the game started, took it off when it was 14-0. The minute I took it off was when Trevor Lawrence fumbled that football. So the Zach Ertz jersey, unfortunately, I love you, Zach. I cannot wear that jersey until further notice during a game, as I need to try and figure out why it's cursed and what do I need to do to change things up.
Yeah, but at best, you're going to have to wait till next season. Probably.
Yeah, I mean, or if you want to break a curse on a jersey, you wear it during a game where they're a shoo-in to win. Like, when we play the Bears this season, that might be a game to try and exercise the demons on that.
I kind of go the opposite way. I feel like the best way to break the curse is to wear it while they're already losing. Maybe I don't know.
Ooh,
kind of spitting in the football god's face of being like, the Bears, really? Come on. And then that's when they say, okay, well, the Bears are going to – Justin Fields is going to have his best game Thanks for that.
I'm just going to say this once. I'm not going to get into it. Justin Fields is a freaking bust. He stinks.
Yeah.
He's so bad.
Well.
Such a bad quarterback.
You know who else, dude? I mean, fucking Trey Lance. Dude, I know he's hurt.
That was the best thing that could have happened to the Niners, dude. He got hurt, and now they can win.
Yeah. Dude, when he got hurt, nobody went over to pick him up. They were all just like, fuck them.
Like, whatever. You don't know what goes on in the locker room.
They were treating him
the way the Eagles locker room was treating Carson Wentz near the end of his tenure in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Remember when Andy Dalton, I think it was he on Dallas maybe at the time? Andy Dalton? When he, I don't think it was 2 years ago, he took that shot to the head when he was sliding.
Oh, I know.
Got knocked out.
Uh-huh.
Nobody.
No one cared about the red rifle. No one worried about the red rifle.
It was fucked up. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's been an interesting football season. Tom Brady's saying that the league stinks right now because there's a lot of 2-2 teams.
I kind of agreed with what he said. There's a lot of sloppy football, which I think comes from like the Chicago Bears, comes from Trey Lance and San Francisco when they were playing.
You don't play preseason, you're not ready for when the regular season starts.
That's true. Yeah. The Packers look like shit because they have nobody. Aaron Rodgers is trying to throw to people, but they kind of can't. Baker Mayfield looks his worst.
Oh, he looks, yeah. I think his confidence is shot. I think it's shot. Honestly, the teams that I feel are the best in football right now, obviously the Chiefs, and they had a weird loss to the Colts, but they respond. You know, they rebounded just fine.
The Colts are going to be fine. I mean, yeah, the Colts are going to be fine. Or the Chiefs are going to be fine.
How about the Ravens in their two losses? They've trailed for a total of 44 seconds.
Somebody reach out to Lamar Jackson for me and tell me how he's doing. Because if they don't give him that goddamn contract after this season, he's doing everything. That game against Miami, he put together a career game. And nobody's going to talk about it.
Because you know what?
Nobody's going to talk about it.
Tua put up a career game.
Right. Like it's such a Dude, he outperformed Tua. He crushed it. He crushed it. He was unbelievable. He had a 75-yard bomb. He runs a 75-yard run. Does not matter. Erased from history because he lost the game because his team couldn't put it together. I feel bad for the guy. I really do.
Well, you
like,
wonder
dude, what else has he got to do?
You wonder how long that team can really stick to. I mean, Marcus Peters blowing up at John Harbaugh. And by the way, I'm just going to say this now. The John Harbaugh's excuse for why they didn't take the three when there was 4 minutes to go in the game and they were at that fourth and goal is one of the
worst.
What did
he say again?
So he said that he didn't want to take the three there because then it becomes a four down game and he doesn't want to put his defense out there at a disadvantage by giving the offense four plays to try and pick up a first down en route to scoring a touchdown. Okay, do you not trust your defense that much that you don't trust them to get a fourth down stop as if that's such a hard thing to do? And secondly, the game was tied, Johnny. You got to just get the lead. Live with the result if you blow the lead.
Bill Belichick has six rings for a reason, dude. Take the points.
Take the points.
I gotta pull what he set up because that like
he cited the analytics and I'm like, dude, you are not seriously. I hope you're not pulling analytics into this.
Yeah, you shouldn't even say that, dude.
Do not pull up the. Firstly, all the old people in Baltimore are gonna kill you for that.
Oh my god, anybody over the age of 40 is gonna freaking
even lose listening
their mind,
to NFL dude. Primetime and Chris Berman always tries to like be very nice about. Even he was like, I don't know about this. But Chris Berman is just like, I don't go with this. Let's see what else. I mean, so many other things.
Hold on, really quick before we move on for the Harbaugh thing, because I had to see what he said.
Okay,
like,
go ahead,
read it. All right, so he quoted. He said, "I feel like it gave us the best chance to win the game because 7 points. The worst that happens is if they go down the field and score, and I think we'll get them stopped. But if they go down the field and score a touchdown, the worst thing that can happen is you're in overtime." Jim, I think that's how football works, buddy. John. Sorry, him and his brother, they're both ridiculous.
I don't know if Jim would have gone for it. He might have.
I think Jim would have gone for it because he's an asshole. Again, he just wants to like be that guy.
Dude,
like,
you want to hear something cool?
Sure.
Before we move on, I'm going to the Penn State Michigan game up in Ann Arbor.
Oh, dude, that's all. Oh, it's amazing. Wow.
Biggest college stadium in America.
Yeah.
It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm gonna wear Penn State stuff because I don't want to get. I hear those Michigan fans are quite awful.
Oh, so are you going as a fan?
Definitely I'm going as a fan, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, I was going to say, if you're playing in the media, then you're not going to be out there with the animals.
No media coverage on this one. I'm just going as a fan. I got offered a ticket, and I'm like, yeah. How many times am I going to get a chance to go to Ann Arbor?
Yeah, you just got, yeah. I don't even watch college football, I'm going.
Yeah.
Just because it's that stadium.
Yeah, like
it's,
if I come to you and I'm like,
insane.
Yo, man, do you want to go to the Horseshoe, Ohio State, Michigan? Do you want to go to the game? I think you'd be like,
sure, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know when else I'd ever go.
Dude, I'm going to the WWE's coming to Philadelphia this weekend, and my buddy's birthday, he wanted to go to it, and he asked, like, you guys want to go? I was like, yes. I've never watched wrestling. But it's like, dude, are you kidding? Someone's going to get thrown off a cage and onto a table. It's awesome. Yeah, dude, that sounds great.
Speaking of thrown off a cage, the Milwaukee Brewers throw themselves off a cliff, and the Philadelphia Phillies are in the postseason.
Dude, I didn't follow it at all until, like, I saw they clinched. I was like, cool. We were doing this episode today. I was like, dude, perfect time to revisit the Jack Fritz episode, some of our predictions, some things he was spot on about, some things you were spot on about, some things he wasn't so spot on
about. So I have
to make
a confession. I got caught up at work. I couldn't listen to everything that I had predicted. Okay. Or I know that he said he thought the Phillies were going to get more than 90 wins, which I thought was a solid prediction.
So we gave the under-over was 88, and that number came from you. If they win tonight, they will get exactly 88. Yeah, that came from you, which I thought was really, really cool. As I was driving home today,
the season's over.
On it.
It's over. They finished at 87.
I thought they played tonight.
No.
They played last night. That's right.
That's right, yeah. So
night off tomorrow's
87.
They went under.
Unbelievable.
He was wrong.
Jack Fritz.
He was wrong, yeah.
We'll have to clip this up and send it to him.
Yeah, he was, but he was right about Aaron Nola. He said he was going to have under a 3.5 ERA. He had a 3.25 this season.
That's incredible.
And he was right about the over 100 home runs between Harper,
Castellanos and Schwarber.
Castellanos and Schwarber, yeah. But that's, I mean, Harper missed 2.5
Harper
months.
Harper missed a lot of time, obviously.
Yeah.
Here was the biggest surprise of the season for me. It was that throughout most of the season, the bullpen was pretty good. At the end of the season, it was not good. But middle of the season, it performed well. The offense between June and August was on freaking fire, even without Harper in the lineup. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and you're welcome, Phillies fans, Justin and I. That's because of us.
We went to the first game after the Joe Girardi era had ended. 10-0
Got the Schwarber ball. Yep. I check Dynasty Sports memorabilia like every week because I'm like, Schwarber going to be there?
Speaking of baseball.
Because I got to get this ball signed.
The guy that caught Albert Pujols' 700th left the stadium without it getting authenticated. So it's now worth nothing. It's worth nothing now. So he turns down meet and greet with Albert Pujols, a signed ball, signed bat, whatever he wanted. He turns it down because he's going to be a jackass and sell it. Didn't even get it authenticated. Now it's worth nothing.
Dude, so he's walking out of the stadium. He's just with all his friends.
He's just casually walking out of the stadium with the most important home run hit on the season.
This is the Pujols ball, dude. Yeah, like, yeah. Sure it is, man. Like, well, dude, that's crazy.
It is really nice to see the Phillies back in the playoffs and going up against said St. Louis Cardinals. I feel great about the matchup. You know, pitching-wise, you're going to go Wheeler, Nola, and then probably Ranger for games 1-2, and then
Wasn't it last week in the – because I did listen to the episode that you did on my way home as well. Weren't you saying that you didn't think it mattered who they were playing against and the Cardinals were going to crush them? And,
I do think the Cardinals can crush them still, but I'm going to be a bit of a homer and be like, wait, what? Did I ever say that?
Dude, I mean, yeah, it's
I was so
whatever.
Mad recording that because they were about to get swept by the Cubs. And I was
tell.
Before I even hit record, dude, I'm sitting literally here because I'm in the Penn State Harrisburg office again, people.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting and I'm watching the game here. And I'm like, my face was so red. As soon as I hit record, I'm like, I'm tearing this franchise apart. And I really did mean it in the moment of it doesn't matter who they play. They're going to die no matter what. There's no point in making the playoffs. And then as soon as I started watching the game that they beat the Astros into clinch, as the night went on, it felt more and more special. It's like, firstly, Aaron Nola needed a big game out of him. And after all of the narrative of him, how he can't pitch later in the season, he can't have a big performance when you need him to, he comes out and is a perfect hit, a perfect game through 6 1/3. Yes, he didn't finish that 7th inning. Yes, it was the right decision to take him out of the game because if he was starting to get hit around, you were only up 1-0. If you blow that lead, there's no guarantee you win that game. And considering how games 2 and 3 went, yeah, it was a good decision to take him out of the game. Rob Thompson's decision to bring in Zach Eflin to close it down, the much maligned Zach Eflin, the guy who has been through it almost as long as Aaron Nola is, it just felt like the right move. Everything Thompson did that night was the right move. And when they clinched, I didn't think it would happen. I got extremely teary-eyed because it finally felt like a huge burden had been lifted off of their shoulders and Philadelphia fans across the nation off of their shoulders. They could beat the Cardinals. They could. I don't know what to expect. I don't honestly know how well the Cardinals have been playing down the stretch. From what I understand, they've been playing okay. They were hot. They were white hot throughout August and most of September. But Philadelphia, now that the burden's off their shoulders, now that they're in, I think you could see them playing pretty loose. Like, what have they got
to lose? Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because they might just be now having fun, and now nothing matters. So, like, whatever, we're just going to have
fun. Gene Skurr in the playoffs for the first time. JT Realmuto is in the playoffs for the first time. Bryce Harper's back in the playoffs for the first time since 2016. Like,
dude, so it's funny, because like I knew you were angry recording that, because when you said they make the playoffs, like, it doesn't matter. Like, going to playoffs and losing, like, it doesn't mean anything, whatever. And that was the only thing that entire episode that I was like, I disagree with you about that. But I kind of figured, I'm like, he was pissed at them for something, and I didn't know when you recorded it, but anyway, so because everything you just said, like, right, you just said JT, you said Gene Segura, you got Alec Bohm, you got Nick Matone, you got all these other younger guys who have never been to the playoffs. Bryson Stott.
Hey, how freaking right was I about that guy?
You were very right about Bryson Stott.
I said he's gonna be special for this team.
You were very right about Bryson Stott, and he's been killing it, especially in the outfield. But like, dude, like, that's very, very important for those guys. And the other thing, too, is, like, you also brought in two big-time names in Schwarber and Castellanos, who are guys, these are veterans. So now you kind of look at Harper, Castellanos, and Schwarber as kind of like your three leaders in a way, right? And these three guys are probably telling all these young guys, giving them advice, helping them, all this stuff, especially Schwarber, especially these guys who have been having successes throughout this entire season, and Harper after last season and this season. And now you got that young core that listened to the veterans. They then went to the playoffs, and so whatever the veterans said worked for the younger players. So now they're going to buy in more. Yes. They're going to do that extra thing that their leaders tell them to do because they trust them. That's a huge thing. That's a huge thing, especially for a guy like Harper who's in his prime. You only have him for a couple years. Yes, you broke the bank this year with Castellanos and Schwarber, but now you have a foundation of something to build off of. It's a very, very cool thing. Like you said, playoff baseball in Philadelphia, it should be a must. And it's back. It's here. It might be here for a short time. It might be here for a long time. Regardless, it's cool. It's very, very cool.
Obviously Kyle Schwarber, who in his career has had a ton of success just getting to the playoffs. And this is a guy that has really, over the amount of time, he has 9 home runs in the playoffs throughout his entire career. Or actually, you know what? I take 9 home runs. He won a World Series with the Chicago Cubs in 2016. Last year, he was in the playoffs with the Boston Red Sox and hit a gigantic grand slam against the Houston Astros. So that's a guy that you can buy into. Bryce Harper actually has pretty good postseason numbers a lot of these hyped up guys like Harper, who was in the early part of his career, maybe not the best playoff performers, but he's tagged like the San Francisco Giants a few times. And then you have other guys that have been on the team that are on the team that Zach Wheeler, not been to the playoffs, but still, a good veteran pitcher that has played in big games.
Yeah.
I think the big one for me is how well can Aaron Nola continue this? Because he's going to be the game 2 guy.
Yeah.
If Zach Wheeler comes out and is July Zach Wheeler in game 1, they're winning that game. Zach Wheeler at times has been the most dominant pitcher in baseball. And it's going to be tough against a very good Cardinals pitching staff, but these pitching staffs are so close and so almost identical. You really don't get the sense that any team has the leg up other than the home field advantage for the St. Louis Cardinals. If they win that series, then they go on to take on the Atlanta Braves. And though the Atlanta Braves, I think, are the hottest team in baseball, and they overtook the Mets, which, by the way, that's hilarious that they overtook the Mets. You did all that in New York just to be a wild card team. Though they are the hottest team in baseball, the Phillies split the season series with them. So that's not terrible either. That's not too bad. And then, we'll see. We'll see what they can do.
Yeah.
I'm very confident that this is going to be a fun weekend in Phillies baseball. I have a feeling that they could really go on a run here and at least make it to the division series. If they win this wild card with the St. Louis Cardinals, it automatically is a successful season, and it almost guarantees that Rob Thomson is your manager going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to give him at least another season the turnaround that he was able to do is incredible.
Insane.
He just seems, and the players seem to love him, and now that things are working and you've done something you haven't done in 10 years, I don't really think you should necessarily mess with that immediately. Like you said, I don't think you should go into this, if you're a Phillies fan, with any major expectations. Just try to enjoy the game and have fun.
Oh, yeah.
We always say hockey's a weird sport. You get hot at the right time. Any team can do anything. I think baseball is like that times 10, where every baseball team's pretty good, right? They're all good players. All baseball players are good players. But you can have a wild card team just barely squeak in and just go on a run and just crush. The bats get hot at the right time, and they're just hitting everything. That could happen, especially with a team like this that hits the way it does. So, yeah, it's fun. It's cool. Go Phillies.
Go Phils. So you guys might be wondering, any Flyers talk this week? I'm going to go ahead and say this. I need another week to prep for the Flyers, Cameron. I need another week before you and I go in on this, because there's a lot that I want to say, but we're at 45 minutes recording.
I need
time to think about this.
Yeah, I do want to take some time. Quick thoughts my expectations aren't anything.
I don't think I've ever had John lower Tortorella's, expectations for a team. Dude.
Yeah. Yeah, John Tortorella's interview on 97.5 made me like John Tortorella more, and also gave me more uncertainty, because when they were asking him, who do you think is your top 6 forwards? He was like, I have no idea. And they were like, is anybody out there underperforming or whatever? He was, Kevin Hayes has to do better. Bobby Brink, he just kind of seems like he's standing out there. He's got to do more, which was cool. It's that's what I want from John Tortorella. But
that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, he's going to tell you how it is, but he's also going to tell you if it sucks, it sucks. And how he's saying it right now is, I don't know what I have, and I don't like what I do now. So, you know.
Cam York and Tyson Forrester didn't make the team because, of course, they freaking didn't.
Why? Yeah, well, he thought Cam York was just standing around, so whatever. And my last thing, where the fuck is Ryan Ellis?
It's almost
been a full calendar year since he was last on the ice. You still don't have the faintest idea what's wrong with
Chuck
him?
Chuck Fletcher,
my heart goes out to
much
him.
That it might be career ending.
Like, my heart goes out to him because he came to Philadelphia, change of pace, to end his career, right? To get this one last run, to try to get a cup because he's been a great defenseman his entire
good.
Career.
He looked good.
He did. He looked great. For those four games, it was a very small sample size. He looked amazing. He looked exactly like he wanted him to be. He looked in midseason form. He was great. And my heart goes out to him because whatever is going on, clearly they don't know. So I'm sure we're frustrated as fans. I can't imagine how frustrated and what kind of mental turmoil this is making on him.
And also, who the hell knows what's going on
career.
Who the hell knows what's going on with Sean Couturier? Is he going to be out for months
Another
or
one.
Weeks? Who the hell knows?
Yeah, like at first it came out, they're like, oh, he's going to miss the first couple weeks. And then like, oh, he might not even make the whole season. And they're like, oh, maybe not. It might be 4 to 6 weeks. And then it was like, it could be like 3 to 6 months. And now it's back to like 4 to 6 weeks.
And I'm just like,
we don't know. We'll probably see him. You know, when he retires, when they retire his number.
Oh, yeah, he's...
Because they're just going to give him a ceremony for whatever fucking reason. Like, it's just, you know, whatever.
Yeah, they're going to retire Coot's number before they retire Giroux's. So...
Yeah.
With that said, I'm going to... I got a volleyball game to call. And,
yes.
Cameron, you've... you good with editing this episode, Cameron?
Whatever.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter,
fine.
At Fly Guys Podcast. Myself, at Goodard Justin, at Cameron Klein 15. One thing I do want to tell you guys is it's great to honestly have Cameron. Like, this is just great to have Cameron back. I can't tell you how much I miss doing these with you. And after the move and everything. And by the way, I really do need to have you and Olivia come up at some point just for, you know, maybe a little fun Saturday of just, you know, checking out the digs and everything. That'd be fun to do.
It would be
happy, be healthy. And as always, let's go Flyers. We'll be right back.